Well, it's 8 a.m. in Los Angeles. We're bringing you true crime headlines. Wow, I said Los Angeles. I'm in San Diego.
Yep.
We're off to a great start. Start the music, Mel.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Rundown. We're here, as we are every time we record our rundown, with our live audience. And I love every time we record in the morning because you all, for those of you who don't know, Joey is rehearsing for an incoming Broadway show called Working Girl. And he's on the West Coast and he's got rehearsal. And people are like, why are you making it so early? And I'm like, I love how y'all think. We make our schedule around your schedule. This is our schedule. And if you could join us, great. But these are the sacrifices we make for true crime. Welcome to I Think Not and our true crime rundown. It's Friday morning, but it's Monday morning by the time you listen to this. I'm Ellen. And how are you, my little dumpling?
I'm doing great. How are you?
His name is Joey, by the way. I was throwing it to him, he's gay and gays don't know how to catch.
Okay.
Great. How are you? Where are you in your rehearsal process? Why are we recording so early? Tell the people.
We're starting tech on Tuesday. We're doing great. We're doing full run-throughs of the show. We're doing stumble-throughs of the show. Just getting it done before rehearsal all day, but my heart is full.
You all, if you are anywhere near the San Diego area or La Jolla Playhouse, go check out Cyndi Lauper's new show, Working Girl. Joey, I truly am saying this from the bottom of my heart, not because I am contractually obligated or because I love him. He steals the show. Everybody knows it. Cyndi Lauper knows it. Cyndi Lauper would not do the show without Joey. I mean, I don't know that for a fact, but I know that in my heart. JoJo is in it, and she's fantastic.
She's amazing. It's going to be a great show. We're starting to sell out, so I would say get your tickets.
Get them. Go to Joey's show in sandiego.com or something like that. You all have the internet.
La Jolla Playhouse. But you're so sweet.
Let us get to the true crime headlines because there are so many of them. Where do you want to start, my love?
Well, I have a couple. So I feel like we should start with Sean Diddy Combs being sentenced.
Who?
Yeah, that guy. Yeah, Sean Diddy Combs was sentenced to a little over 4 years. What was it? 4 years and 3 months?
Yeah, it was something like 50 months or something like that.
Well, he was convicted on 2 counts of transportation to engage in prostitution. He will get time served as well. So he's really only going to be in there for like another 3 years and change. Because wasn't he in jail for a year?
He's been in jail for a year. I misunderstood. I thought the 50 months was in addition to time served.
Oh, I could be wrong.
I mean, usually when they say time served, I thought he was getting time served plus 50 months. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Great. You guys, come to us for the headlines-ish.
Oh, he will do 36 months, according to Courtney.
Okay, thank you, Courtney. Yeah, time served, I guess. So 50 months total.
You know, there's been a lot of discussion about whether for these types of crimes and the things that we know Diddy has done, if time at all is a win or if not enough time is a loss. It's really hard and what message this sends out. But last night I read an article on USA Today. Apparently USA Today was doing their investigative journalism job.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to review some documents that had been sent over to Judge, I never know how to pronounce his last name. Is it Subramanian?
Judge S.
Judge S. We love that. Who obviously resided over this case. Well, this document was a request.
Presided.
What did I say?
Resided. I don't think he lived on the case.
I always do that. Presided.
Anytime you have a word gremlin, I'm blaming Janet. So keep going.
Well, he presided over this case.
Yes, I resided on the case. Right in the case. I stayed there, put up curtains and everything.
Good morning. Well, this document was a request sent by Diddy's defense attorney on October 6th. Asking the judge to please let Diddy serve his time in New Jersey at Fort Dix. Why? Quote, in order to address drug abuse issues and to maximize family visitation and rehabilitative efforts. He don't want to be in Brooklyn.
We're 15 minutes away. It's not that big of a deal. Your kids are fine. I'm sure they have a car. Just no.
What do you think the real reason he wants to be in New Jersey?
I think it's the living conditions.
Yeah.
I think the jail is just nicer in Jersey. Luigi Mangione is there. You don't want to be in that prison down in Brooklyn. I really just think it was I just want to be in a nicer, quieter facility. There's less people there. I think it's completely just a making his life more comfortable decision.
Well, it comes as no surprise that Diddy is making a plea to Trump to pardon him. And Trump actually confirmed this in an interview when he said, Oh, I always got along well with Puff Daddy, as I call him. But according to Trump, Diddy was hostile with him during his campaign. And y'all know that man holds a grudge.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually doubt that that pardon will come. I think he just likes the idea of saying on the news, Puff Daddy came to me begging like a dog. You know how he goes. But hey, listen, I also would not be surprised if Trump is like, I'll give you a pardon, but it will come with a very high price tag. Do you know what I mean?
What do you think that price tag would be? Endorsements or something?
Yep, something like that.
I can't imagine him prioritizing Diddy over everything else he has to do, but you know, here we are in 2025 and everything is in the upside down. I will say that it was last Friday when we did the rundown and we didn't have a verdict yet. We didn't have the sentencing yet. And I refreshed my phone all day long.
We all did.
All day long. And everyone kept updating, you know, CNN, every news channel was updating it. And all I kept reading were all of these people, his kids, his fucking priest, his fucking Sherpa, the Dalai Lama, everyone coming out and saying how changed he is, how sorry he is. Great. If you are sorry, if you are changed, I am happy for you and your life. But I am sorry. Someone has to pay for the decades of shit you have done to people we didn't even hear from. I am really glad you've changed. I personally don't believe someone who is capable of doing the lifelong things that he has done is capable of changing in a year. But hey, I have been wrong about most things in my life. I also thought the excuses they were using were borderline insulting. First of all, you all know if you heard all of our rundown coverage, I fucking hated his lawyer, Brian Steele. But he was saying, you know, his dad died at 3. I am sorry. His mom had substance use disorder. So did he. He grew up in an all-white town. And he was the black guy. He experienced racism. Let me walk this back. So he raped, attacked, manipulated, hurt, molested, lied, cheat, stole because of racism?
Yeah, it's a stretch.
There are tens of thousands of people who've experienced any kind of prejudice, homophobia, racism, and they're not out here running an international illegal enterprise like Diddy. Hack it in.
Yeah, it's a stretch.
It was too much.
And I think now is a good time to say, release the Epstein files. Release the Epstein files.
Josh wrote, my dad died when I was 7 and I don't hit people.
It's that simple.
Before we move on, can I ask you, what did you think about the sentence? Did you think that it was commensurate or what were your thoughts?
I actually was shocked that he got that amount of time. Leading up to the sentencing, Judge S, the rhetoric that he was using, I was nervous to let myself feel like, oh, he's really gonna, you know, bring the hammer down on this guy, because you never know. All of his rhetoric leading up to the sentencing inferred he was going to give it to him. So 4 years, I'll take the 4 years. I mean, the defense was hoping for 14 months and then he would have been scot-free and speaking in Mar-a-Lago next week. So who knows? But I'll take the 4 years.
You gagged me last week with that speaking engagement thing. Then I went on to research all of the dates. He had the narcissism. When we left last week, I said 5 to 8. And I really do believe that the judge felt like the jury made a mistake. I felt that in my bones. I really don't have a lot of backing for that. It's just something I felt emotionally. But to your point, all I wanted was anything other than time served.
Agreed. And we got that. So I'll take 4 years and change over nothing.
Yeah.
Another case that I discovered takes place in Houston, Texas. This year, a minimum of 16 people have been found in the White Oak Bayou in Houston, the last being on October 8th. And there is a rumor around Houston that they have a serial killer. But Mayor John Whitmore has been adamant that, quote, we do not have any evidence that there is a serial killer loose in Houston. Back in September, in the span of 5 days, 5 bodies were pulled from the White Oak Bayou. The last victim they found, according to forensics, had no signs of foul play. But that is the only victim who has been found in the bayou that was declared not a victim of foul play.
Mm-hmm.
The mayor also has implied that this area does have a large population of folks experiencing homelessness, and perhaps they're dying of illnesses, and their, quote, friends and associates do not take them to a funeral home. I'm sorry. Are you saying that they're dying and their friends are like, well, into the bayou you go? Oh, what?
That's a terrifying thought, but that's a very callous statement.
One of the victims, the youngest actually, was 20 years old. And her name was Jade Sage McKissick, who had gone missing on September 11th. And her body was found in the bayou on September 15th. Now, apparently several victims have not been identified yet, so that means the count is actually not 16, it's 22. But the mayor's really pissed because he's frustrated of the accusations that are flying around because he's saying these rumors are causing harm. It's all over the news in Houston. They're talking about it on the news, they're talking about it on social media, and he's like, I am fully transparent. If there were a problem, you would know because I'm an elected official and we never lie.
Yeah. No, I know they don't.
Okay. So he's like, if there were a serial killer, I would say so. Now, I called my sister who lives in Houston, and actually today is her birthday. So happy birthday, Jess.
Aw, happy birthday.
She hadn't heard of this case, but she had to remind me that, I'll quote my sister, Joey, Houston is fucking huge. Mm-hmm. She said they apparently have multiple mayors. Is that true? Can someone in Houston confirm?
A city can have multiple mayors?
That didn't sound right to me.
I don't trust a lot of your family when it comes to statistics and facts.
And you shouldn't. My mom took a lot of lies with her to her grave.
Kathy in the chat says, I think she was talking about the greater Houston area. Melissa said there are so many cities that make up Houston. I did not know that. I thought Houston was a city.
There is, but there's lots of neighborhoods. Anyway, I'm actually going to keep an eye on this because that story's kind of crazy. And whenever a mayor is like, we have nothing to worry about, I'm like, okay, all right.
Question, and sorry if you said this and I missed it. Has every victim been identified? Do they have any John or Jane Doe's? Did you say that and I missed it?
No, not all of them have been identified. And it varies between men and women ages 20 to 60s.
That's terrifying.
So I'll keep an eye on it and I'll report back when I know more.
Yes, please, because I had not heard about that until this moment. So thank you for bringing it to my attention. But who can keep track of anything right now? I just open my phone and I go, ah! And then I throw it across the room. That's how I read the news. Welcome to my brain. I am going to rage for a bit. And I think you all too. Pop an edible if you're listening to this in the morning. Whatever. It's your life. Live your life. So for clarification, we are recording this episode on Friday, October 10th. Just yesterday, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals has once again stayed the execution of Robert Roberson. He was set to be executed on October 16th of this year for a crime that he likely did not commit. For those of you who don't know, I did report on this story last year on Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case. It has stayed with me. It has haunted me. I have checked in on this case many times. So let me give you guys the most concise story I possibly can. And I know Joey doesn't know this story, so I know he's going to rage about it. Robert Roberson from Palestine, Texas. In 2002, he was convicted of killing his 2-year-old daughter, Nikki. Ordinarily, you all know me, I would be screaming from the rooftops. For anybody who hurts a child, I believe that they should experience nothing but awful things. But this is different. So last year, he was nearly executed around this same time. October 17th was his former date for execution, and that execution was also stayed. Here is the details of what happened. We're going back to 2002. Mr. Roberson's 2-year-old daughter was sick, very high fever, and she had fallen from the bed. Nikki and Robert were married at 18. Robert had dropped out of school in the 9th grade. They were married for about a year, but Robert did have custody of young Nikki because days after the baby was born, Nikki's mother, she had substance use disorder, alcohol use disorder. She was not allowed to see or be with the baby. And something I don't think I knew or understood or clocked the last time I reported on this story, Robert was living in a certain amount of poverty. So when I talk about the fall off the bed, to be clear, the bed was a mattress with cinder blocks under it. And that was corroborated that the baby fell, he didn't see the baby fall. He woke up and the baby was on the ground. She very well might have hit her head on the cinder block. Definitely not a safe way for a baby to sleep, but that's a whole whole separate conversation. The night that she was sick, they had fallen asleep, and then he woke up a couple hours later and she was at the foot of the bed. He had rushed her to the hospital. There, once at the hospital, the doctors, the medical staff was judging Robert's response to this whole situation and noticed that he lacked emotion, that he had a very flat affect. Because of that, he was prosecuted, convicted, and sentenced to death for Nikki's murder, simply because of his demeanor. What they didn't know at the time, and Robert didn't know at the time, was that he has autism, and he wasn't diagnosed until 2018 while he was in prison. Now, I want to add a little bit more context to details to make you question the validity of this verdict. When Robert brought Nikki to the hospital, they did not look at Nikki's medical history at the time, because if they did, they would have seen that this poor baby has been sick since birth. Most likely, this is not a fact, but probably because in utero, Nikki's mother drank and did various amounts of drugs. But days after she was born, the baby had many infections. She was somehow resistant to multiple antibiotics. She had this chronic ear infection that persisted, and the baby had tubes put in her ears. I had tubes put in my ears, which are made to help with ear infection. It didn't help. After a while, she was a couple months old, and she was diagnosed with breathing apnea. Now, just remember that diagnosis, put a pin in it mentally, because we're going to circle back to that in a moment. Breathing apnea, much like sleep apnea, it causes someone to suddenly stop breathing, collapse, and turn blue. She had been experiencing that for some time before this incident had all happened. They also didn't look into her recent medical history before this baby passed, because within the week before, the baby had been vomiting and coughing and had diarrhea. After her symptoms didn't stop for 5 days, Mr. Robson and his mom, who also helped with the baby, took Nikki to the ER in Palestine, Texas. The doctor prescribed this medicine. I might pronounce it wrong, but it's called Finnegan? Anyway, it is an opioid. And now it is restricted for children under 18 by the FDA because it causes breathing difficulties and death. It has what the FDA call a black box warning that's like, do not give this to children. Well, they gave that to 2-year-old Nikki, and then Nikki was sent home. She didn't improve. That night, her temperature was 103.1. So the next morning, they had been to the ER. The next morning, they went to the pediatrician. By this time, the baby's temperature was 104.5.
Oh my God.
Again, she was prescribed more Finnegan in a cough syrup form. And this was all corroborated by her toxicology reports, which showed lethal levels of this medicine still in her system. However, it was all the amount that was diagnosed by medical professionals. We're talking about the night she passed. She was sick. He had given her the medicine, put her down, and a couple hours later, he had fallen asleep. The baby was found at the foot of the bed. And then he picked her up, put her back in bed, woke up in the morning, and the baby's lips were blue and she was unconscious. Rushed her to the emergency room. She was intubated and she was resuscitated. They determined that by then she was brain dead. She might have had oxygen deprivation for maybe 10 to 12 minutes, maybe even more. And they diagnosed her with shaken baby syndrome. Shaken baby syndrome has since been debunked as junk science. There is no medical professional that will diagnose or back up the shaken baby syndrome. In fact, it has been the subject for several people previously to be exonerated for being charged with, you know, hurting a baby with shaken baby syndrome. Moreover, Robert had a public defender at his trial, and the public defender was like, no, I mean, I think he did it. I think he shook that baby. I think the baby had shaken baby syndrome. Complete lack of counsel. Then, you guys, it just does not stop. And as I dug further into this than I did the last time, I am more shocked than ever. At his trial, there was a nurse that took the stand. And at the time, she was a nurse. She said she was a sexual assault examiner. And she testified that Nikki had been assaulted by Robert. No physical proof was given. No rape kit. Come to find out, That nurse wasn't certified in any kind of sexual assault trauma whatsoever. But she said it, and boom, he's a pedophile. I get it. I would be the same thing. If a medical professional tells me that, I'm like, rot in hell, motherfucker. He was a pedophile. He was gone. He was done. So all of the conclusions that were drawn as to what happened to Nikki have been scientifically debunked. Furthermore, the medical examiners, because he has been appealing, several medical examiners have taken tissue samples. They concluded that the baby had pneumonia for maybe 2 to 3 months, and she was never diagnosed. So that, with the toxicology report indicating she had those high levels of that drug that has now been banned by the FDA because it stops babies from breathing, everything we know about the bed, I'm going to play for you a couple of interesting clips. So the audio you're about to hear is the Anderson County DA, Allison Mitchell, and she's testifying before the Texas committee regarding her pushing through the execution date of Robert Roberson. Just have a listen.
Before I begin, I wanted to inform the committee that I have a hard stop at 5 o'clock. My niece is having her first communion, and I was one of the 6 people she selected to attend.
I know there's been some discussion about some medical images of Nikki that were rediscovered in 2018 that had essentially been sitting in a box for 15 years. Does that sound accurate to you?
Yes, we were actually getting ready to start the first hearing, and the district clerk said, "Wait, I think I know where those are." And she literally went and got them, and we were all very surprised.
Out of respect, attorney, I understand you weren't there. I know you didn't argue the case. You did request the execution date to be set. So I do think it is fair that this committee has some base level expectation of your knowledge of the case. Has any jury at any time heard any evidence or arguments of the following things? That there was a CAT scan, which I wish we had more time. I would really love the state's explanation for how this medical evidence was somehow missing and disappeared for 15 years locked in the basement of your courthouse. I would love to spend time on that, but we don't have time for that. Has any jury heard any evidence or arguments regarding a CAT scan, which does appear, according to expert testimony, to show only one single minor impact site to the head? Was any jury ever made aware of this?
I want to clarify, first of all, if I may, once, as the committee should know, that once evidence is submitted in a criminal trial, it becomes property of the court, and the clerk is the caretaker of that. It's not something that the state was in possession of, as it was entered into evidence. So there was nothing nefarious there by the state or by the defense. I would
appreciate
have to go
the
back
clarification, but the reason this line of questioning is critically important because the legislature has a question before our committee right now as to whether our extant junk science law is being faithfully adhered to, because there may be medical evidence that is materially relevant to the outcome of this case that has or has not been heard before any jury. So I would just appreciate a response. Has any jury at any point in time ever heard expert testimony on the CAT scan that showed there was only one single minor abrasion or bump on the back of the head?
I would have to refer back to the trial transcript
so you don't
to
know.
See if the fact.
You don't know. Okay, has any jury heard arguments or evidence that CAT scans and autopsy photos show only a single impact site on Nikki's head and only a small amount of subdural blood and brain swelling at that part?
I would have to check the original transcript to accurately testify.
Has any jury heard any arguments or evidence to the effect that Nikki had potentially toxic quantities of a drug, Finnegan, in her bloodstream at the time of autopsy? And has any jury grappled with or interacted with the facts that those drugs now carry an FDA black box warning against prescribing it to children Nikki's age? Has any jury ever heard arguments to that effect?
Respectfully, sir, that was brought up during the Article
11.073
hearing, so that's the... I would have to check the original trial transcript that was in front of a jury.
You mentioned in your testimony a minute ago that Nikki's body was lifeless, blue, and limp. As a father of 4 young kids, this is heartbreaking to hear of any child. Are you aware of the episodes that are documented according to witness testimony in her medical history of previous episodes of breathing apnea where she also presented at the hospital with those exact same symptoms?
The maternal grandmother testified to that in the original trial, if I remember correctly, mm-hmm. when she was younger.
So you are aware that at previous times in Nikki's young life, she had presented to the hospital lifeless, blue, and limp?
According to the evidence presented at the original trial, yes.
Do you believe those were the result of abuse?
What was a result of abuse?
Her presenting at the hospital lifeless, blue, and limp from previous episodes with breathing apnea.
I'm not in a position to speculate as to that.
But you wouldn't dispute that she had showed up at the hospital with similar presentations in the past and that there was never a finding or adjudication or allegations of abuse. Is that correct?
I believe that her presenting with sleep apnea would appear different, but I would have to go back and look at the evidence that was presented at trial.
It was not sleep apnea, breathing apnea.
I apologize, I misspoke.
That's a significant difference. You set the execution date, you don't know when. Do you know why?
Because that was the next step in the course of the law.
Were you satisfied that a had been committed?
Yes.
What was that based on?
The totality of the evidence at the original trial, post writs that have been filed, and hearings that have been held.
Just to be clear, you're referencing evidence that no less than 30 times in this hearing you have said that you have no knowledge of at the moment. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, sir. What was the question?
I'll move on. The justice system can get things wrong. Is that correct? That's possible?
Just like any humans, police officer, priest, yes, that's possible.
Is there any chance in your mind whatsoever that a murder did not take place in this case?
Based on the totality of the evidence, as I've stated, a murder took place here. Mr. Roberson took the life of his almost 3-year-old daughter.
And you have 100% certainty that that happened? I'm not asking what the legal standard is in court.
I trust in the legal process that has the safety nets and reviews to do the checks and balances to make sure everything is right, and I believe that that did occur here.
So to be clear, you trust in the process that one moment ago you admit sometimes does fail.
I feel really good with a DA like that in my town. How about you?
It's really scary because at that point, you know, someone is whispering in her ear, we could get sued. This is a bigger issue. We can't admit to wrongdoing.
You could drive a tractor through those pauses when she's asked those questions.
Well, thank you for sharing that story. It's really heartbreaking. And also, how many times have we screamed on this podcast that demeanor evidence is bullshit?
Absolutely. I can't go on record saying if he's innocent, but there is reasonable doubt. I have a very complicated relationship with the death penalty, only because I hear certain cases that are vile and heinous, and I think, yeah, you should die. However, the circumstances under which, when, you know, my emotions get in check and I'm able to have a normal, stable brain, the threshold has to be 100%. This isn't it. This is not the threshold for the death penalty. The reasonable doubt, it's reasonable. Reasonable. That's it. The only way I support the death penalty is if someone is hurting, killing a child in 4K. He shows his face. He shows his ID to the camera. Then I'm like, yeah, die. You can fucking die. This isn't that. And that is why the death penalty is so dangerous. As I sit here right now, I am not saying that Robert Robson is innocent. I am saying this is all enough reasonable doubt to not kill him.
Yeah.
And because of the advances in science, to give him another trial. That is what I am saying. I am not saying let him out. I am not saying free him. I'm saying I don't think we have the whole story because you all know I will go to the mat for a child. But this case is built on discredited science and then misleading and, quite frankly, ill-informed medical testimony and prejudice against his autism. The first thing that clocked everyone was, well, his baby is dying. Why isn't he in tears? He must have done this. The last thing I wanted to tell you guys about, now this really should sink it all for you. The New York Times did this expose on the man that actually put him behind bars. And his name is Brian Wharton, and he was the chief of detectives in Palestine, Texas in 2002. And the New York Times did this whole thing about Brian sitting with Robert saying that he got it wrong. In fact, I want to play for you Brian Wharton in front of the Texas House saying this.
But I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed that I was so focused on finding an offender and convicting someone that I did not see Robert. I did not hear his voice. He's an innocent man, and we are very close to killing him for something he did not do.
Wow.
Essentially, what he has said is, I was ego-driven.
Yeah.
I wanted to get the conviction. Sounded good enough.
Wow.
And I did it. And he said that for 20 years, this has haunted him. He didn't know about his autism. He admitted we did no investigation.
Wow.
He said he was the head of the chief of detectives. He said, I took everyone at their word. I took that nurse at their word. I took the doctors at their word. He admitted everything. He's not a police officer anymore. He's actually in the clergy in some way. I'm not sure how, but he said, I got it wrong and I have never been able to forgive myself.
Wow, that's actually fascinating. And it doesn't surprise me that you said he's a clergyman now, because I would imagine that his spirituality has opened the door to, because that's a thing. Like, we've seen it so many times in investigations where you're like, you're going off ego. Your ego is, you're not going off of facts. You want to solve this case for your ego or because you have pressure by, you know, media. But for him to make that kind of admission, I think it's great. I mean, it comes really late, but
I'll play some of the interview with Robert, because he sits with Robert on death row and it's fascinating.
This is death row, and this man doesn't have long to live. I haven't seen him in more than 20 years.
Good morning, Robert.
Good morning to you. Good morning.
Let me just say, I am so sorry that you're here, and so sorry that you are still here.
Yes, sir.
It's our failure.
Yes, sir.
It truly is.
But he's never been far from my mind. Why? Because I helped put him here, and he didn't deserve it. In 2002, I was the chief detective in the police department in Palestine, Texas. A two-year-old girl was fighting for her life. Her name was Nikki. She had been brought to the hospital by her father, Robert Robertson. When I got to the hospital, Robert wasn't showing any emotion. His daughter is dying, but he doesn't seem to care. The medical staff were talking to me about shaken baby syndrome. Nikki would die the following day. So we arrested Robert. He was tried, convicted of murder, and sent to death row. That was two decades ago, but I've never been able to forget Robert Robertson. This case has been a burden on my heart and my spirit.
You have never been far from me. I'm convinced we did the wrong thing.
I think if it would have been proper investigated more, we wouldn't be here sitting here now probably, you know.
Yeah.
But
no other possibilities for her injury were considered. I regret deeply that we followed the easiest path.
It was bad enough, you know, me losing her, right?
Yes, sir.
I wouldn't do anything now to bring her back, you know.
I tried to move on. I would comfort myself and say, look, the system did what the system does. He's got an attorney. He got his Miranda warnings. We went by the book. He's where he's supposed to be. But several years ago, someone appeared at my door. It was Robert's attorney. And I told her, I've been expecting you. Sadly, I guess, it took her appearing at my front door for me to find my voice again. I now understand that Robert did, in fact, have autism.
It's hard for me to express myself in certain things and stuff. I had lots of things I was going to talk to you about, but sometimes you get wordless, you know, wordless and stuff, you know?
I understand, yeah.
Autism would explain Robert's flat affect and lack of emotion in the hospital. It's absolutely insane that this never came up in his trial. I've now come to understand that Nikki was a very sick child, and that some of those medical issues could have very easily played into the injuries that ultimately killed her. Not only is there reasonable doubt that Robert did do it, there is unassailable doubt that Robert did do it.
His execution is stayed. He has not been granted a new trial. I'm going to try and find any calls to action that we can possibly do. We did this the last time. I'd love to think that we were a tiny, tiny part of not letting this man die for a crime he possibly did not commit. So check our Facebook and our Instagram for that. All we can do is try and do the right thing and make these lawmakers do the fucking right thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, agreed.
Anyway, you all, thank you so much for joining us for The Rundown. We sure do appreciate you. Remember, we are only here on your general feed, but if you want more of us, or if you want to join us live in the chat, which, chat, if you're on the West Coast, thanks for showing up at 8 a.m. We do have our chat here on Fridays with us live, helping us out, giving us shit, making us laugh, weighing in. You can find all of that on patreon.com/ithinknot. But until next time, I love you, Joey.
I love you too, Ellen Marie Marsh, and I love you, baby.
I love you now, bitches. Bye.
Ooh, I need a warm up.